You are listening to The Morning Magazine for Monday, December 27th, 2021. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the holidays can be an especially hard time of year for those who have recently lost loved ones. We'll hear about a participatory art project that brings grief and gratitude into a public space. Then, CityCast Denver sits down with a journalist to try to find out why a remodel of the Denver International Airport could cost more than $1 billion, more than initially budgeted. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines, and then It's a Public Affair with the Community Foundation of Boulder County. And as always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then at 9:30, Leland Rucker will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with a morning sound alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, a look at local and regional headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
There were long lines of cars in the metro area yesterday with people wanting to get tested for COVID-19 after the Christmas holiday. The demand for tests is surging, with some wanting to keep their families safe and now some needing to prove they are virus-free for their work, school, or travel. Some testing sites reached capacity. The Denver Channel reports that there were also a high number of walk-up patients in addition to those in cars at the Front Range Community College facility in Westminster. To the south, the testing site at Sky Ridge Medical Center in Douglas County was not able to accommodate the number of people who wanted tests. Kits for in-home testing have also been hard to find. Dr. Carrie Horn, chief medical officer at National Jewish Health, told the news outlet that she thinks everybody is worried, and the cases in Colorado are definitely going up, some due to the Omicron variant and some due to people starting to gather, increasing the chance of spread. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment recommends that those going to testing sites register in advance at its Testing for COVID website. As of last night, over 120 flights in and out of Denver International Airport had been canceled yesterday because of the surge of COVID-19 cases hitting the nation, mostly of the Omicron variant. The airlines have been struggling because of staffing shortages. Almost 700 flights at DIA were delayed yesterday, leading Denver to have the most delays of any airport in the world and the fourth most cancellations. The Denver Gazette reports that on Saturday, 67 were canceled at DIA and almost 300 delayed. Thousands of flights were canceled nationwide starting on Friday, Christmas Eve. And CNN is reporting that more than 2,000 flights have been canceled today in the U.S., with about one-third of those being international flights. A hearing will be held today in Jefferson County about the sentence of the truck's driver who was convicted of multiple crimes after a fiery crash killed four people in 2019. Alexis King, the district attorney whose office filed and prosecuted the charges, said in a statement that she would ask the judge to change the sentence down from 110 years to as many as 30 years and as low as 20. King said that the defendant knowingly made multiple choices that resulted in the deaths and serious injuries to others and what she called mass destruction. The DA now says that the lower sentence reflects an appropriate outcome for his conduct, which she says was not an accident. However, the Colorado Sun reports that Aguilera Medeiros' legal team said a term of 20 to 30 years in prison is still too long. Leonard Martinez, one of the defense lawyers, said that such a sentence is not consistent with prior similar cases, both in Colorado and the country, and they plan to keep all options open, including asking Governor Jared Polis for clemency. 2 weeks ago, District Judge Bruce Jones sentenced Aguilera Medeiros to 110 years and said that it was the lowest required by state law. He added that if he had discretion, he would not have imposed that sentence. The case has gained international attention. Nearly 5 million people have signed a petition for Aguilera Medeiros' sentence to be commuted or reduced. The union representing the guards at the federal prison and prison complex in Florence, Colorado, is saying that the facility is becoming more dangerous for them and for the inmates. Two incarcerated men have been killed in the last 3 months after fights. The Denver Post reports that the complex houses the country's most notorious criminals. About a third of the correctional positions are unfilled, according to the American Federation of Government Employees Local 1169. A spokesperson said that the number is likely to jump higher in the new year after retirements and resignations. The union says that the lack of officers means that those who usually work as cooks and maintenance workers are filling in on guard duty. The U.S. Bureau of Prisons is also bringing in officers from other prisons to fill in for weeks at a time. Snowstorms hit the high country yesterday. U.S. 40 between Kremlin and Steamboat Springs was shut down for a while as winds reached over 45 miles per hour and visibility was reduced to less than a quarter of a mile. There were problems on the plains as well. Winds over 60 miles per hour created dust storms and horrible visibility yesterday afternoon. I-70 to the east of Denver was closed in both directions between Peoria Road and Byers due to a crash. CBS 4 reports that more snow and wind is expected in the mountains today, but not as intense as on Sunday. In the metro area today, it will be mostly sunny with highs in the low to mid-40s and a 20% chance of snow showers this afternoon, increasing to 50% tonight when the low will be about 22. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the mid-30s. Right now, it's about 28 in Boulder and about 21 in Denver and Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The holidays can be an especially hard time of year for those who have recently lost loved ones. A group of women from mental health and faith community backgrounds gathered yesterday to inaugurate a type of do-it-yourself memorial on the pedestrian bridge over Boulder Creek, just west of Broadway and east of the public library. It's called the Grief and Gratitude Project. One of its co-founders is Wendy Cass, a local chaplain.
So we've got a rope tied along this pedestrian bridge, and we have a mailbox filled with ribbons on either side of the bridge. And the idea is to have people write down whatever they're grieving or whatever they're grateful for on the ribbons and then tie it along the rope all along the pedestrian bridge.
About a dozen people gathered in a circle for the grief and gratitude ceremony in the chilly wind before breaking out to tie ribbons to the bridge. Another project co-founder, retired psychotherapist Gaia Micah, says there's a particular form of healing that can come from processing grief in a group setting.
Last year, we had such an incredibly rough year, not just because of the pandemic, but because of all the horrendous losses that were happening all over the world. And I just began to have this sense that we needed to do something in the community. And this project evolved out of that. It was like this image would not leave me alone about needing to do some kind of collective, community level grief. And because of the pandemic, we really couldn't even gather last year. On the city land, they really didn't want us to even gather. So we came up with this idea of hanging ribbons along the bridge, and that people could come and express their grief and express their gratitude and write it down or even just imagine it into the ribbon and then tie the ribbon on the bridge. And it turned out to just be a beautiful project, and there was... It felt like it allowed people to express their grief in a way that was safe and in a way that didn't ask them to do some, you know, sort of big expression publicly, but that was still public and that still had a sense of the community doing this together. Because that feels to me, and I think Wendy agrees with this, that we really... That grief is not just, it's not just something we can do all alone. We really need each other to share our grief.
What is the importance of being able to express grief in an open, shared space with other people who may be hurting?
Yeah, grief is like a social emotion. And so much like joy, how joy grows bigger when it's shared, grief absolutely... it's like necessary to be in a social container to fully be able to access and express your grief. Even this ribbon project is like, there'll be ribbons along the bridge, but it's like this deeper acknowledgement of community coming together and just like exposing our grief. It helps move something instead of being isolated.
This is the second year for the Grief and Gratitude Project in Boulder, and Sharika Wilson has been present for the ceremonies both years.
Well, last year, a partner of mine's brother passed away. We happened to just be over here and we seen the ribbon ceremony. So we did that. Came back this year. A little bit different story. My daughter had passed away in August. Had a hard time dealing with it on my own. So just waiting for another space and opportunity to be able to release that. And came here today and they were setting it up. So I wanted to partake in that to make sure that I celebrate my daughter's life.
Is there a particular story that you'd like people to know about your daughter?
Well, she took her life. What I want to make other energies or people or souls aware of is that, you know, we can try to aid and assist as much as we can. But that doesn't stop the fact that there's internally something going on, not just always mentally, spiritually and soulfully. There's other things that are taking place. My daughter fought really, really hard. 22 years old. She was in the military, passed out medical discharge out of the military due to this. And she was in therapy and everything, and she still did it. She was tired. So I would tell others her soul was tired. And no matter what we say or do, some others just cannot take this earthly experience. And that's what I want to spread awareness about, because I've been in her shoes as well. When you're beyond tired, you can't even express it. So I know what it is now, her soul. You know, it just wasn't fit to be in this earthly experience anymore. She's on the other side. She's been forgiven and all is well. That's what I want to enlighten the world about when it comes to suicide.
What do you need to feel supported and to be able to make it through an experience like that?
My spirit team, my ancestors, my angels. That's exactly how I got through. I wouldn't have never got through if it wasn't for them pushing me. My daughter leaving, her energy, her strength and her power pushes me. To keep going forward. I did not want to keep going, but she's telling me, Mommy, I need you to keep going. I need you to speak this truth. So I will. It leaves me alone, but I'm never alone because I walk with her and my ancestors.
Anyone who wants to add to the Grief and Gratitude Project may do so by visiting the pedestrian bridge over Boulder Creek near the municipal building. Ribbons and pens for writing on them are inside mailboxes at either end of the bridge. Project co-founder Gaia Micah says her experience as a psychologist left her with the feeling that therapy concentrates too much on the individual rather than on the collective context. She says collective trauma requires community solutions and that exercises like the Grief and Gratitude Project foster a society's ability to cope with jarring shocks.
We need to do a lot more of coming together as a community, especially in the times that are ahead, because the things that are going to bring on grief are increasing. I mean, when you think about the loss of the species that we're experiencing, when you think about the losses that are related to climate change that we're experiencing, when you think about the losses related to racism that we're experiencing, it's all as if it's accelerating. And so we're going to really need to be conscious of coming together and sharing the grief so that we can have the energy to do what needs to be done. I really think that expressing our grief and sharing our grief releases energy to do the work that needs to be done in the world.
The ribbons hanging on the bridge will come down during another Grief and Gratitude ceremony at 2 p.m. on January 8th. For KGNU, I'm Shannon Young. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. We'll be back after this break. Administrators of the Denver International Airport recently announced they need another $1 billion to finish updates to the airport's Great Hall. CityCast Denver guest host Avery Lill sat down with Denver Post reporter John Murray to find out why this project is costing so much time and money.
Just to get the latest, you reported that the airport is now asking for an additional $1.1 billion to complete the Great Hall project. What is all that money for?
So the basic answer is that that is to go back and do most of what they had originally set out to do. 2 years ago, it ran into trouble. A year and a half ago, they scaled it back to complete it within more or less the original budget. And their argument now is, hey, do the rest of this at some point, because DIA is going to resume growing. It's already about back to where it was in 2019 in terms of passenger traffic. And they think it's going to continue on an upward trajectory. So if they don't add it back to the project now, it's only going to get more expensive and it's only going to be more of a hindrance for passengers.
So they're saying this will actually save money in the long run.
Basically, yes. Yeah, basically, yes. A billion now, more later. So instead of stopping at the halfway point, they're saying, let's spend bigger now and finish it off.
I've got to say, my brain somewhat short circuits when we're talking about amounts of money this large. Let's go back to chapter one, though. How did the Great Hall project even start?
So it started a decade ago, and then they built out the hotel and transit center just south of the terminal. That has a big plaza connecting it, the big Westin Hotel, and then where the A-Line train comes into Union Station, they built that. And so as they got off of their plate, they looked ahead and they talked about this Great Hall thing, which is, hey, this terminal was built in 1995. It was originally intended to have about 50 million people coming through every year. Now, by 2019, we had 69 million. They think they're even on an upward trajectory of 100 million in the next decade or so, which sounds pretty optimistic, but I've heard crazier things.
And what was the original hope? It sounds like obviously to accommodate more passengers, but what else did they want to do with it?
They also wanted to update and refresh the facility to also adapt to just changes in air travel, right? So when it was built, DIA just had these long banks of check-in counters, right? Because everybody went up and saw a ticket agent when they got to the airport, if they were checking a bag, all that stuff. We didn't have self-check-in on apps before you got there or digital boarding passes, things like that. So what they really wanted to do was modernize that part of the process and say, hey, we don't need just these walls of counters. We need larger areas, more friendly areas to have lines that are not twisting everywhere, and for people to serve themselves, have space for these kiosks and stuff like that. And then on the security side of things, this was the last major airport built before 9/11 in the United States. After 9/11, obviously the security situation changed and they had to get more serious about security, and it also took longer. Also, DIA continued to grow, so just the footprint of security got bigger and has gotten more constrained over time. And it's also, if you think about the atrium of the terminal at the airport, there's always been this worrisome factor of, hey, it's a little bit vulnerable from above. You have all these walkways above security, whether it's like contraband getting through or just people being vulnerable to attack from above. They had been touchy about talking about that for a number of years, but that was really one of the main concerns about, hey, let's move security to different spaces where we can expand the capacity. So they talked about doing that upstairs where some of the ticket counters are, then making more space for ticket counters by reconfiguring other parts of the upstairs of the terminal.
And I read in your story that this whole project was supposed to be finished this year, but I moved to Denver about 3 years ago and it's been under construction the entire time I've been here. You've been reporting on this for more than 4 years. The story is almost old enough to go to kindergarten. Why is it taking so long?
The first big hiccup in the saga, to mix metaphors, is early in 2019, we started to find out publicly, hey, there's some problems on this project. Initially, it was some battles between the airport and the contractors called Great Hall Partners, a big Spanish conglomerate called Ferrovial out of Madrid. They're leading this with a Centennial-based local company called Saunders Construction. And it's this big, giant public-private partnership. Early on, there's a battle over concrete, the original concrete in the terminal, because they're extending the upper level into the atrium a little bit. You need structural steel support. And the concrete, the concern was that in testing, it's not strong enough to support that. Now, there's a lot of twists and turns there. In the end, they were able to accommodate that. It did delay the project or start the delays in the project, though. And it didn't end up being quite as bad as they had feared it would be. But that's just one step. There's also at this time, battles between the contractors and the airport officials, including the CEO, Kim Day, who'd been there for, I think, over 10 years at that point. She's an architect herself, and the contractors thought that she was micromanaging the project, requiring her approval and sign off for a lot of decisions, as well as problems with other airport officials. On the other side, they have said that the contractors underestimated the cost of the project, that they were delaying the project themselves by taking forever to make decisions on their end, that their timelines were too optimistic. And just a whole battery of disputes and finger-pointing back and forth started to play out. And this is in the first year of the project. And it disintegrates to the point where in August of 2019, after there's been months of reporting in the media about some of these problems and the delays that are starting to mount and costs that are starting to skyrocket in the projections, they end up terminating the contract, which is a huge step that very rarely happens in public contracting.
And to do that, they essentially had to pay the contractors to go away or to terminate their contract, right?
Yeah, they had to pay out everything they owed. They had to pay for all the materials that were on order. There were even millions of dollars of, hey, this public-private deal that you had that was going to last 30-plus years. You had considerations down the line and expected returns on your investment. We have to compensate that. It didn't end up being a huge amount of money, but it's public money, so any amount is something I think that raises eyebrows.
In all, how much money are we in at this point? How much has the airport spent so far?
You know, I got spreadsheets to help me keep track of this. Either spent or committed through what they now call phase one and two. They just finished phase one to take down the construction walls in the middle of the concourse. That makes it easier to get through. Phase two is underway now with moving the one security upstairs, checkpoint. They're all in right now for $770 million, give or take, wherever those budgets end up. And Kim Day had been committed and promised to hold it to that. However, as the new CEO came in and there's this current of extra appetite from city council, some members of city council, like, hey, let's not leave security hanging. Let's finish out at least that part of it. So they're not going to a council that is just putting its hands up and saying no more. But the question is, will council go for $1.1 billion, which is more than double what they've spent already? So if they get through with that, it would bring the whole project up to like almost $1.9 billion. One thing I will note is that this $1.9 billion price tag really includes most of what they originally set out to do. And so you're talking about the original project for more than twice the money that they had originally budgeted. And I think that is one thing that breeds frustration and distrust of government is when entities like this, even though DIA pays its own freight, it generates its own revenue, this is not coming out of city tax dollars. The fact that they're doing basically the original project and they admit now that working with those contractors originally, they just got the price wrong, that they way lowballed it. They really just whiffed it at the start and just did not understand how much it was going to cost.
I'm really glad you also brought up where the money is coming from. It's not taxpayers' dollars, but it is public money. How does that work?
So you think of how an airport operates, and I guess not everybody knows the intricacies, but it's off of its own revenue. So you think, like, just as a passenger, you pay for parking. That's a lot of money at the airport. All of the concessions and the restaurants and shops at the airport pay rent and a share of revenue to the airport for being there. The airlines pay rents and landing fees and all of those various operating costs. And so all of that adds up. And so really the key stakeholders that the airport has to keep on board with projects like this are the airlines, because in the end, they're going to end up paying for a lot of projects. They'll pass it on to passengers, of course. But so far, the airlines do seem on board with this. They want a growing airport. They're eager to grow here. And I think that is sort of one of those hard truths that people look at this and say, hey, like, gosh, $1.1 billion, think of what the city could do with that. The problem is that we don't have a $1.1 billion if it's not being spent at the airport on this project, because otherwise, you'd have to get the airlines to kick in money for city projects outside the airport. That's not going to happen, obviously. So
it's not like it could become sidewalk money or something like that, even
right,
if it didn't become DIA Great Hall money.
Right. And that's hard to digest, I think, for some folks, because, yeah, it's sort of to improve on its own grounds, DIA has a blank check as long as they can keep their stakeholders on board, because those stakeholders will pay for it in the form of increased fees. But those are not fees that would go to things outside of the airport.
Well, John, I just want to thank you so much for helping us unspool this long and complicated story. And thanks for being on CityCast Denver.
Oh, thanks. My pleasure.
And so the saga of the Great Hall Project continues. John told me if City Council approves the additional $1.1 billion, work could continue through 2028. That's 10 years after the whole thing started. So yes, travelers will still have to deal with construction around the holidays this year and next year and the year after that and the year after that and the year after that.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Javier Flores, Alexis Kenyon, Dr. Decibel, and to the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. The Hightower Lowdown is on vacation this week, so stay tuned for a commentary from Mumia Abu-Jamal. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.